Okay, good afternoon. I'm Frank Duffy, and I'm chairing this penultimate session, which is about address the question, has planning forgotten about design? Or, as an alternative, of course, has design forgotten about planning? So I'm not sure where you'd want to ask the question, but there's certainly two ways around. I happen to think that design is incredibly important. There is a huge value that design can, the design imagination can offer society in solving intractable problems in the clever ways. So that's where I start from. I want to make one or two, before I hand over to Andy Altman, I want to make some general points about how I particularly understand design. You should understand that most of my work has been involved in complex organizations, helping them to address strategic problems using design. My view is that architecture in itself is inert. Buildings don't do very much on their own. But they are full of potential, enormous potential, dimensions of potential, which can be exploited in order to achieve social and business objectives. And there are three, in my view, levels of the potency of design in solving problems. One which gets most attention is about being efficient, doing more for less. The second level, more subtle, is about adding value, the design imagination addressed to a social situation in which the design solution makes the business or the government department or the city work in a better way or develop or live in a better way. It makes brings things together that would otherwise have been separate. It's magic. It's making something out of nothing. And the third level is the least understood, but I think has been brought up in many occasions in the discussions in the last day and a half, also starts with the knee, and that is the expressive capacity of design. The way design speaks, the way the physical environment can be used to reinforce, for good or ill, values in society, how strongly that can be. And I have absolutely no doubt that efficiency is at least important, effectiveness is more important, but the expressive capacity of design is by far the greatest. Now, I am an enemy of generalized virtue, you'll be glad to hear. And the idea that all design is the same and design formulas can be rolled out in order to solve problems in a predictive way seems to me a fantasy. Design potential can be unleashed when it is related to purpose, social, business, governmental, individual, family, but purpose. What is design for? What does it achieve? Now, the corollary of that very important statement, which is perhaps sounds a little bit old-fashioned to you, is that the wonderful thing is that purpose changes. No society, no business stays still for very long. So therefore, the use of design has to be constantly renegotiated, a dialogue between the users and the designers about what is important, which features of design need to be unleashed for the immediate program. So that relationship, I think, is a critically important thing to understand. I think it would be not too crude to say that the modernist view of architecture in relation to social purpose is that it was something you might call passive, that the role of the architect was to somehow understand the brief of society and provide something that fitted that and made it work. There is another view, which I think we saw an example of with very interestingly with Rem Koolhaas yesterday, which is one might call detached, in that design in its end is independent of use. It's something that has a value in its own right. The view I would take is that design, at its best, can be catalytic. It's capable of communicating expression, and in other ways, the importance of purpose and making purpose achievable through its expressive capacity. So design does things, can be used in a way that is immensely more powerful than you might think. Certainly not passive, certainly not detached, certainly not cold, but hot, directed at achieving objectives. And a point I made yesterday is that the physical design has a correlate in the way in which the design is achieved through finance, through the building process, through all the complicated interventions that are necessary in order to achieve a building in relation to a client. And that process is as important to understand that process and to be prepared to rethink and redesign that process is as important as being prepared to rethink and design the physical artifacts. Otherwise, the danger is that we are trapped unthinkingly, without understanding it, by the delivery process. We are part of the supply side, and we deliver what we're expected to deliver without being critics of it in a way we should be as intelligent members of society. I think Richard is very aware of that issue. Now, in relating design to society and social purposes, it seems to me there are four conditions for success, apart from understanding the potential of design, being able to measure it, and apart from being able to understand the process. But the first, absolutely critical success factor is that someone or some group of people has to take responsibility for the not just the execution, but the occupation of the designed entity. You could call that leadership. In complex projects, leadership is absolutely essential, and leadership is related not to infinite power, but to infinite responsibility. The second success factor is the recognition by designers dealing with complex problems that these problems are systemic, that there are many facets to be considered as well as physical design and related. There's a technological design program, there's a social design program, and these need to be fitted together in a way that is coherent. Only possible, of course, if there's leadership. The third factor is that there has to be a responsibility to view design to a certain extent objectively, to understand how design works, to have data about that, the relationship between the purpose and the achievement. It has to be very subtle, very complex, but it has to be examined in a way that is transparent. And the fourth factor for success in complex project is there has to be mass democratic involvement. Design touches everyone, and the involvement of large numbers of users in complex project is important. Absolutely vital. So those, in terms of the time scale, and I mentioned the word risk yesterday, are ways of dealing with very long time scales and constantly changing risks in the environment of the design situation. So what I might, just to make this concrete, because it sounds rather abstract, if we take the, and I'd like your opinions about this when we get into the discussion after Andy's talked about this, if we take the four projects, the White City, the Elephant and Castle, King's Cross, the Lee Valley, in terms of strategic objectives. I would like to know what the strategic objectives of those projects are. Is it, for example, in the case of the White City, is it to enhance London's position in the knowledge economy, to attract the talent, the brilliant people to the organizations that are necessary in order to make that part of the economy, which you know is vitally important, more successful than it is at the moment? Is that the objective? Good. Is it another objective might be to encourage at a micro level small-scale economic development to help not grand organizations, but individual organizations develop the embryonic organization structures that they need in order to succeed and to make a city like London successful. Or it might be social inclusion. This may be the program of the fundamental strategic program of Elephant and Castle, to invent a social fabric which brings together parts of society who otherwise would be in conflict or separate from another, and that's a strategic objective of design. Or it might be, and this is a little bit too vague for my taste, but it's certainly something that several of the projects we've, all the projects we've seen, there's the objective to, and certainly the Lee Valley, to improve the quality of life of the city. There are hundreds of other such objectives, but the point I'm trying to make is that not all four projects analyzed would put the same value on these four objectives if they in fact were objectives. And therefore, differences between the designs would be legitimate because they would be prioritizing different facets of society, different objectives, and using design imagination in order to achieve what society, the city, the economy wants at this time. So that's a way of analyzing the projects, and perhaps when we, we're talking about them, and later we could invent, I'm sure, a better a program. But just one or two words before Andy starts. I was very struck in the, I have to say, by the poverty of the use of the word community and understanding of the complex relationship that exists in modern society in the discussions we've had in the last day and a half. For example, we did not talk about the, except one, there's one mention of it in one of the projects, King's Cross, but should have been given much more prominence, the enormous part, the in a large project in a city, which depends upon the knowledge economy, of the development of the universities and the educational system in a way that is integral with the project as part of the program. That seems to me a very precise, very concrete, very realistic situation to get hold of, rather than talking about community values in general. Remember, I'm an enemy of generalized virtue. Another important part of the economy, which is absolutely vital, is the development of what might be called knowledge communities, of the knowledge workers with their powerful technology, their connections with all other parts of the economy all over the globe, and the what are the conditions under which these knowledge communities will be fostered. They are a constituency which exists in an economic sense and should have a voice in the shaping of the cities are necessary for the 21st century. So that is, I suppose, a question I'm going to ask you later on, Jerry, and your wonderful comments about the distinction between government and governance, and that your absolute right accusation that we use words, partnership, that fudge the hidden issues that lie behind the way in which the process is carried out of decision-making in these situations, the avoidance of this imagination of the more complex aspects of the polity within which we operate is a weakness in our position, that we are not, what is the place of the knowledge community, the university, in the decision-making of the shaping of the city? Is the university just simply, it's a state's department looking after its own interest, or is it something that is absolutely, completely, necessarily integrated with the community? That's a view that I find quite rare and certainly hasn't been part of our discussion. So that's my framework, and within that, if you'll forgive me, Andy, I'd like you to make your much more valuable comments, I'm sure. No,